Spectacular Diagnostics.
Hello and welcome to a very special edition of the Preview Show. I am delighted to be joined by Matteo Jorgensen of Team USA. Matteo, welcome. How are you?
I'm doing good. Team USA. That's a new one.
Sounds good, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's nice.
Have you got the clothes yet?
No, I haven't gotten anything. That all comes in Paris. And I don't know. I think we don't even sleep in the village until the night before the race. So we sleep outside because the training from the center of Paris is not ideal. So I don't think I'll get anything until the night before the race, maybe.
And I believe that America have a Ralph Lauren designed leisure wear. Very fancy compared to other countries.
I've seen some photos. I don't know how much I'm going to be wearing that stuff, but we'll see.
It's very white.
Yeah, and very, very proper.
Okay,
not my style.
We're here to discuss the Olympic road race. I suppose the obvious question is just, how amazing does it feel to be an Olympian?
It's sweet. I couldn't have ever imagined being an Olympian. I find myself saying this the whole season, that I couldn't imagine this or that, but it's true. Making it to the Olympics in general, being an Olympian was never a thing that I thought as a kid I would do. It's really a special opportunity. And I have to remind myself of that, because it's easy kind of when you get caught up in this world to, like, especially with road cycling, I feel like the attitude towards the Olympics is almost like it's just another race. But it's not. I mean, especially for me, I know how much importance the U.S. puts on the Olympics and how many people watch and how big of a deal it is. So it's not another race. I think I'll definitely will go into it with the same mindset that I would go into the Tour de France, let's say.
Okay, so Tour de France, 8th overall in general classification, 2nd on the stage to Isla 2000, very, very close to winning. Some pesky yellow jersey caught you with about a kilometre to go. Looking back at your race, I suppose you're a lot of satisfaction with how you performed over the 3 weeks.
It was good. It was a big step. I mostly wanted to, I was there to help Jonas. That was the first thing. And I think I did a really good job helping Jonas. I was there in the moments he needed me to be in and out. And sometimes, I wasn't really present on some of the days, but also it wouldn't, I'm not at their level. So I also can't, when Tade goes, it's not like I'm going to be able to bring him back to the wheel or something. So I wasn't really necessary on those days so much. But when he did need me on the gravel stage, on the flats, the sprint stages, St. Luca, I was there. And that I'm happy with. And then for my own performance, I think I just wanted to see, can I do a Grand Tour? For GC, can I perform well over 3 weeks? Are my legs going to hold up if I do go full every day? Because in the past, I've had days always where you take, it easy, you go in the gruppetto, and that has a totally different effect physiologically. So I just wanted to see, and I think I passed more or less that test. And now I know, also for myself, that I can do it. And yeah, that's important. It's not like 8th GC is really going to change anything for me. I it's a nice result to say that I was top 10 in the tour or something, but especially on the team that I'm on, it doesn't really move the needle at all. But I think a stage win would have been really, really good. And that was, we came close, and I'm also happy with that day. Like, my performance over 5 hours that day was the best I've ever had, for sure, numbers wise. And I was stage 19, so that's also really good.
So I believe that day, the day of Isla 2000, the plan was for Jonas to attack on Bonnet. I think Jonas has come out and said that himself, and then he gave the call to say he wasn't going to do it. He didn't have the legs to go from that far out. How hard was it then for you guys to change strategy from being a satellite rider to then going for stage one?
Yeah, I wouldn't say it was crazy different. Like, I think changing my mindset wasn't so difficult in the moment, because in the end, I knew I was going to have to either do a really hard pull on Isla for Jonas if he's, you know, if he had attacked, or I'll have to do, you know, a really hard pull on Bennett if he already came then or something. So it's not like I was prepared to do my best performance on that day. But then the difference was, like, Wilco and I had invested so much in this breakaway. We pulled for, I mean, we did 90% of the work in that group, because those other guys there were just, they thought what we thought, what that Jonas was going to come across. And so they were just letting us do the work, and they put all the responsibility on us, as they had the right to, because in the end, like, if Jonas was going to come across, none of them would have had a chance at the stage win. So they were just going to sit on us and save as much energy as possible. And so, yeah, Wilco and I were doing all the turns in the group. We got, maybe got some 10-second turns from Carapaz every here and there. But we had spent a lot of energy is what I'm trying to say. And so I knew going into the last climb that I was strong, because I knew I was on a good day and I felt really, really good the whole day. And I told them also on the radio that. But it wasn't like I had full confidence that I could do like a massive performance for 40 minutes, like I could if I had just stayed in the peloton. I didn't know when my legs would run out, and I actually think they didn't really run out. I did a pretty good performance on Isla. I think I did like 40 minutes out of my threshold or around there, and that's after an absolutely massive day. But there was nothing really I could do. And the funny part is they had calculated already in the control room how much time that I would need to come to the bottom of Isla to win the stage in front of Pogacar. And it's not like they told me this in the race, they told me after, but they thought I would need around 4:20 to win the stage if Pogacar was going. And I think I started at 3:53, and then he beat me by 20 seconds. So their estimate was like spot on, which is insane in my mind. But yeah, they guessed right. And Tade was just flying. Like, the numbers he was doing, not just that day, but on Plateau de Bay and almost every mountain stage, were things I've never seen before. So it's not like I can be gutted or something. I was beaten by a better guy, and I was also given the chance to go for it. So it's still nice.
And he said in his interview, you wouldn't have seen this, I don't think, but in his interview afterwards, he was honest enough to say that once he got past you, he felt he was cooked. Like, he had put in so much.
I don't believe that.
He said, and during the race, you could actually see him looking round, and that's something he never does. He never looks round. And not long after he passed you, he continued to look round.
Yeah.
I don't think that made you better.
I don't know. I don't know if I believe that he was cooked or something, but at least he made it seem close.
But I mean, that day you're dropping, and this is not meant to sound insulting, you're dropping proper climbers. Now, I'm not saying you're not a proper climber, but, you know, you're physiologically different. You're dropping guys like Carapaz, who's won the Giro, he's won multiple stages in Grand Tours, mountain jerseys, and you go and produce something pretty special. Now, thinking about the future, I know it must give you huge confidence knowing that you can climb at that level in a Grand Tour.
Definitely. No, that's what I can take out of the Tour, is that not only can I, like, throughout this year, I felt like, okay, I can finally climb at the level required with these guys on a good day. But then to do it on stage 19, is something I've never done or even been close to doing. So it's like I'm finally there, and I think I can go forward with confidence. Like, when we plan for next year, I don't know what the team's plan is, but I can finally not have that doubt in my head, like, oh, but I can't do Grand Tours, or I can't, I just thought it would be too much, but I think I can do it. I just have to eat a lot of food.
And the time trials as well. So you were seventh and fourth in the time trials. Something I know you've worked a long time at being a good time trial rider. Those were possibly your best results on a time trial bike, especially fourth in the final stage, even though you crashed. I mean, that again, also looking at Grand Tours, if there's a lot of time trial kilometers, it surely holds no fear for you.
Yeah, no, that was also good. Yeah, it's funny. It's like not like I'm pushing any more power in the time trials than I was on Movistar. I've trained way more in a way more aggressive position, so that's definitely different. But I also just have a way different CDA now. My CDA is just so much better because the team has put a lot of investment into it, and I've also worked really hard with them. I spend like if I do a 30-hour week at training camp, I spend like 15 of those hours on the TT bike. So it's not like a miracle or something, but it definitely helps to be on this team and be supported by them with that. But yeah, in general, like I think also what you said, like, you know, if I can compete in Grand Tours now or whatever, but then I still look at the gap between me and Remco, Jonas and Tadej, and if any of those three line up at the Grand Tour, it's like I'm racing for second place or third or fourth. So I still have a long way to go to close that gap if I ever could. But yeah, I think yeah, there's still Grand Tours maybe where they don't line up, hopefully.
Yeah, unluckily for you, it's the welter and you're not riding because that now looks like the place where everybody's going to have some fun because there isn't the big guys aren't there, potentially Roglic,
Yeah.
he isn't there either.
Yeah, I'm cooked. I can't do
And
that.
now we reach a point where you know we've long talked about the type of rider you are or what you'll become, the discussion between a classics rider and a Grand Tour rider, and yet you're still in the same position where you're ticking both boxes. So this season, like you've won Dwars Vlaanderen, you've won Paris-Nice, you top 10 in the Tour de France. Do you think that that will continue? Do you think that kind of dual focus will continue?
I think so. I hope so. I was talking with Ryan about it on the bus on one of the last days of the tour, and I mean he's leaving the team, but he thought I could keep doing it. It's not, but he also is not going to be making the decisions anymore. But I think if as long as I do the Tour de France and not the Giro, it's totally possible, and it's also even good. Like it's great training. You get a lot out of those races, so I think it's great. But if I were to do the Giro, probably you would have to do it a bit differently. But I also don't really want to do the Giro so much. I would rather stick to the Tour, and maybe the Vuelta. But that remains to be seen. I hope for myself to keep doing the classics, that's for sure.
Okay, and talking of classics, a nice little segue into the Olympic road race. So we have 272 kilometers, 3,042 meters of climbing. Now, to put that into perspective a little bit for people who are listening, San Remo is 2,000 meters of climbing, so 1,000 meters less. Flanders is 2,400, so again, significantly less. The Worlds in Belgium and Leuven was 2,400. The Glasgow Worlds last year was 3,666. So races of a comparable distance, only Glasgow is harder technically from an elevation point of view. Obviously, Flanders has lots of cobbles, which makes it much, much harder than the numbers suggest. Now, the crucial thing with this race is the start list. We have 90 riders. 20 of whom are not realistic riders for a race of this level. So basically, you've got this enormous, big, long race with lots of elevation and 70 riders. When's the last time you raced such a small field? Juniors?
Was trying to think of that. I don't know. I don't know really. Maybe like one of the last days of Paris-Nice or something. Sometimes you get like crazy dropouts. I think sometimes that we have less than 100 on the last day of Paris-Nice, but it's also a totally different scenario. I don't know how it's gonna go down with this small of a field. It's daunting a little bit.
And that's the thing. I don't think anybody knows. I think people like myself are making an assumption that the big teams are going to come to some type of agreement. You guys all know each other. There'll be talk before the race of maybe putting one rider up each, controlling the break until 100k to go, and then gloves are off, go and race. Now, in terms of the big teams, so Belgium, Slovenia, France, GB and Denmark, all have four riders. Spain, Netherlands, Italy, yourselves, Australia were meant to have three, but Plapp has crashed out, so they might be down to two. So, I mean, Van der Poel's a big favourite. He's only got two teammates. I mean, how do you see this race going? Because I'm struggling to work out how it's going.
Yeah, but me too. I'm in the same boat. I don't know. I see what you're saying, that like maybe some at least the top five teams with four guys could talk a little bit, and maybe they agree to put a guy to ride in the start. But then I look at the selection of those teams, and Belgium, like, what are they going to put Tiege Benoot to ride for 200k? I don't see that happening. I just don't. I don't know. I think potentially in the start it could work itself out without any without any talk from anyone before. I think it could just work itself out. Like, we fight for 30k at the start and we're all attacking each other and nobody goes anywhere, because nobody's going to let anybody go from any of those nations or any of the top 10 nations. It's just like going to maybe cause a bit of a standstill. And then we'll maybe get a slightly smaller break from, I don't know who, just some other guys, you know, below the, yeah, maybe some of the smaller nations or something. And then they start controlling. But even then, it's like, you maybe have four guys controlling, and they could burn up pretty quickly. So the race could start really, really far out, is the way I see it. Like, it could start halfway through the race almost. It could start lighting up. And then from there, I think we just see like an attrition fest, and probably a solo. I would imagine a solo winner on a day like today, but. Or a day like this, I mean to say. But I really don't know how it's going to go down. That's just pure speculation. And I haven't heard any, like, any talking between any of the teams. Like, at the tour, I had Laporte and Wout and Tiege on the bus every day, and they all never talked about putting a guy to ride or anything like that. So, yeah, I guess we'll just have to see.
You make a good point. Belgium, you know, they've got Wout, who's one of the big favourites for the race. They've got four riders, but they don't have a natural domestique. That was their choice. They could have chosen a Tim de Klerk or somebody like that, but they've got Remco, yeah. They've got Wout, they've got Jasper Stuyven, who's in amazing form, and they've got Tiege. Netherlands, potentially, they've got Dan Hoel, along with Van Baarle and Van der Poel, so they potentially have a rider who can
place. Yeah, they'll put Don Hula, I think, to control, but that's just one guy.
And then Even some of the other bigger teams, some of the other four-man teams aren't particularly strong. Slovenia don't have Pogacar here. They don't really have any need to work on the front. Great Britain don't have a real candidate who's going to win. They don't need to work on the front. Denmark, potentially, because they've got Pedersen, they might be interested in controlling. And France, I don't see a natural domestique. And amongst the French, they seem to have three or four co-leaders. So I think what we're saying is nobody knows how it's going to go down. This central section of the race before we get to the lap circuit in Paris, it just looks like a sort of classic. A classic race, you know, it's just full of short, little, kind of 500 meters to a kilometer climbs. They're all between 5% and 7%. And if it's raced, then by the time you come round to Paris and the lap circuit, most people are going to be dead. I mean, everybody's talking about the circuit, and that's what we're actually going to focus in on. But I hope the race isn't over before we get here, because the circuit itself is a really nice, it's a nice looking kind of route. It kind of reminds me of Glasgow a little bit, but there are longer sections of straight. So we can see here, there's a nice long section. I think it's maybe about 2-3K straight section here. There's another straight section down here, whereas Glasgow, you didn't really have that kind of that flat section. It was always twisting and turning. Most people are focused in on Côte. I'm going to get my best French here. I know you're an expert here. Côte de la Butte Montmartre. There we go.
Wow.
Which is the
I don't
common.
know where you're reading that from. I've never heard that name before.
That's what they've put it in the road book.
Okay.
Oh, there's a nightclub.
Oh, nope.
No,
Not going in
no going
there.
into the nightclub. Right,
That's
so
for Saturday night.
they make a right turn, and we're on to this Rue Lepic, cobbled street. Now, the cobbles themselves don't look like Roubaix cobbles. There doesn't seem to be a huge amount of kind of gaps in between them. So for me, the fact that it's a cobbled climb, it's a climb. That's now you've obviously ridden on things like this before. When the cobbles don't have big gaps between them, does it make a difference? Is it just like a road or?
It's not just like a road because this looks, well, depends on the parked cars, but it does look a bit, nah, it's not that narrow. Y typically the cobbled climbs and stuff are a bit narrower, so it's already different than a normal road, but then this does look like it's not pavers. Like they're definitely cobbles, and there's probably like not like the cobbles are that uneven from each other, but there's probably big holes and like a bunch of like divots and stuff. So for sure, it's going to be super bumpy. And just the fact that it's the cobbled climb in the race, I think will make it like a focal point for guys to attack. I mean, that's just kind of how it goes in road biking when there's cobbles and stuff. It's like an opportunity for someone to make it even harder. And I'm just interested to see what it's like on the bike. Because it also never gets really steep. I think it
No.
looks like a pretty long effort,
So it's
which
one.
is interesting, like long and steady, which almost never cobble climbs are like that. So.
So it's 1.6K in length, 3.3%. So it really isn't a steep climb. I think the maximum's about 6%. It
That's
does get
narrow though.
narrow. It does get narrow here towards the top, and then the descent. The start of the descent, I think, is actually on some cobbles, and then they quickly off onto the asphalt. So you can see here it's still cobbled. And then as you move down off this street, I think that's when it starts to get onto the normal road again there. So that's the main climb in the lap circuit. That's done three times. The other climbs are only done twice. The other climbs, I think they can be underestimated a little bit. So this one here is again another 1.5 kilometers. It's at 3.7%. This one is on the normal road. It's actually got steeper points in it than the previous one. It's a very wide road, slight crosswind, but lots of built up. It's a built up area, so not really going to feel the wind. And I think with everybody focused on the cobble climb, some might forget about this one. Especially it comes, where are we? Comes 4K after the top of the cobble climb. And then there's a slight area of kind of flat within it. So again, all the way up here, I mean, it looks pretty steep on the camera. It's only saying 5-6%.
Yeah, it does look pretty. It's also on a wide road, which is always worse.
And then a very short area of flat or even downhill, and then things get narrow up to the top here. Again, I mean, it looks, Van der Poel's a favourite. It looks very sort of punchy, but as you say, it's not the kind of 8%, 9% climbs of Flanders. It's three,
Yeah,
four.
even Glasgow had that one,
Glasgow
the
was
one
really
steep
steep.
one.
Yeah, 10%. There was two climbs in Glasgow. One was about kind of 8-9%. The other one was about 10%. That really hurt them. Then we've got this one, which is another cobbled climb. This time it's 1.3 at 3.6%. It's not cobbled all the way up. Again, looking at the cobbles themselves, that there's a few gaps in between, so it doesn't look the smoothest surface, this one. And again, it's a city centre, so as you pointed out, the road surface is not going to be great anyway. There's no way they've been closing the roads in Paris to do roadworks ahead of the games. Then again, it gets a kind of flatter section here before.
This one's also narrower, it seems like.
Yeah.
And straight. The whole thing is really straight.
And it's a tailwind as well.
Yeah.
And then it comes out onto the normal road. So about half of that climb, about 600, 700 meters of it, is on the cobbles.
And the top finishes at the Pyrenees, it looks like.
it's a very long climb. And then again up here, 7.5. I go through the route and you don't often see 7%. And this is.
And yeah, the thing about these climbs is that, I mean, it's just like Glasgow, where you get there after so much fatigue, and like a bunch so small, it's only gonna add to the fatigue. No one's gonna be able to hide from the wind the whole day. And these kind of climbs are plenty hard enough to split it up. Like, you'll be so on the verge of being empty at this point in the race that like any little rise, if somebody attacks, is enough to break the group or allow someone to go solo or just create some hesitation. It's also like, it's almost better. Well, Glasgow was exciting because there was like corners into the steep climb, so it already created that separation. But like these kind of shallower climbs, in my experience, are more tactical. They create like more excitement because there can be that moment of hesitation when somebody goes, whereas like on a steep climb, it's like everybody's just going anyway. Like you just have to go full to the top. Like the one in Glasgow was just a wall, and it's not like anybody was riding easy up that. But some of these can be like, you can ride up it as a group, or if somebody attacks, then if there's a hesitation, you don't make it to the wheel, then there's still draft. So I still think from this, a solo, it'll create a solo winner and some groups of ones and twos, the way I see it.
Yeah, and I think if we're comparing it to Glasgow, if the move goes in this sort of central section, it's Remco territory. Once we hit the lap circuit, I was lucky enough to be on the streets of Glasgow watching, and Remco had a very bad time once they hit the circuit. He didn't like the corners, he didn't like the constant accelerations. So I think almost if Belgium are looking at two leaders, who knows if they're going to play three leaders or four leaders, but if they're looking at two leaders, this is where Remco's allowed to do what he wants. And then if it's still together for the lap circuit, you would imagine that's when Wout comes forward. But the tactics that sometimes goes on in Team Belgium are not always spot on. And we've seen before in World Championships that Wout has seemed to be very frustrated at being blocked in the peloton. Maybe he goes early. How do you decide if you go?
Maybe.
Is it purely just what happens in the race? Who else is jumping?
You mean for myself?
Yeah. Or do you just say, no, I'm like, so you've got three riders, okay? So you've got Sheffield, McNulty, and yourself. All three are good riders. Is it a case of, right, if it goes in the central section, Brandon, this is you. I'm going to wait until the end. Or can you not have a tactic like that?
It's hard. Yeah, I don't know what our plan will be. We haven't discussed it at all, but I personally would do it in a race like this. I would cue more off of riders themselves than sections of the course. So like,
So you, Mark. Wout.
I mark somebody
Yeah.
or a few guys from a few of the favorite nations. Brandon does the same. Magnus does the same. And then you're a bit more covered. And then you can always have like a tactic where Magnus covers, some early moves or something, and then sits on if he needs to, like if we decide that, or to kind of neutralize groups or something. But in general, I think it's a bit dangerous to say like with only three guys, like, oh, you cover this middle section, I'll cover the end, or because then you don't know how your legs will be, you don't know what can happen in the race, and then if you stick too strictly to that, then it could easily all be lost because it's almost better to think about how the other teams will race it and then cue more off of them. And then I think it'll just be really chaotic. So in the final, like, I think pro actually not even in the final, I think by halfway through the race we'll see like what other teams' plans are, and then also who has legs and who has cards still to play, and what the race situation. It could already be completely broken up by halfway through the race. And then the other thing you have to realize is that we don't have radios in this race, so it's like if it really is chaotic at the start, it could be that groups are away and you have no idea what the situation on the road is, because you don't know. Yeah, they might hold up a chalkboard with some numbers and some times every once in a while, but that's far from being able to control the race or something. And there was also only three circuits at the end, so it's not like a circuit race where you can get to the final circuits and then play the game from there, where you have your team staff and they have some color coding system of, green to ride, red to status quo or something. It's more like I think you're gonna have to be really watchful in the race yourself. Like every rider will have to be really their own like road captain. They're gonna have to each we all have to watch to see who's going in the early break, and you really are gonna have to like squint and see like, okay, who is which riders actually, not like which nations, but which exact numbers and riders, because otherwise it's gonna quickly slip out of control, I think.
Now, previous Olympics have shown that riders who have come from Tour de France have an advantage. So, what do you think about that? Have you got an
I don't
advantage coming from
know.
that?
I don't know if we have an advantage. Maybe. I think for sure there was a good training block. Like if you came out of the tour well, I think it could go really well. But yeah, there's also you could also have prepared yourself just as well, I think. Like you never know. Yeah.
Now, in terms of riders to watch, so in terms of the in-form riders, I've identified yourself, of course, because you finished the tour in such good form. Alaphilippe, who just won yesterday. Hirschi, who just won yesterday as well. Remco, who just won the time trial. So those are the form guys. If we're looking at riders who have come out the tour and maybe didn't work as hard as the GC contenders, we've got Van der Poel, we've got Van Aert, we've got Laporte, we've got Stuyven, guys who are always good in championship races, Matthews, Pedersen, and then the guys who I think are question marks because maybe they didn't do the tour or maybe they're just strong classics riders. So you've got the likes of Bettiol, Kuhn, Van Baarle, Mohoric, Narváez, Pidcock, Skelmoser. I think that's about half the field because the field's so small.
That's at least half the
Van der Poel is the massive favourite in terms of what people are saying, in terms of what the bookmakers are saying.
field, I think. You think?
Van der Poel is the massive favourite, and then it's Van Aert, it's Pedersen, it's Remco. That's what they think. Now, Van der Poel had a poor Tour de France by. Well, that's what he said. I'm not judging him, but he said he had a poor Tour de France. The same thing happened last year, and all of a sudden, come Glasgow, he flicked a switch and he was unbelievable. There's
Yeah.
no guarantee that happens again.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
I was surprised about last year at Worlds. That was really having seen him at the tour and then also having seen him this year, like it's not like he wasn't trying or something. He was trying every day to get in the breaks and sometimes couldn't even make it in the break or whatever. Like the day Campenaerts won, I don't know if he even could make it in the break that day. And that was pretty
He
late in the
tried
tour.
once, and that was it. That's all.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's like I don't know. I can't predict that stuff. It's impressive to change that much in a couple of weeks. But in my mind, well, I'm not even
Come
gonna
on, come on.
give things away here. I see Remco. I'll say this. I see Remco as the favorite for the race. I think with the team that they have, they can gamble a bit, and I see it as a solo rider winning this race. So in his position, he has like the luxury of being able to attack with no without hesitation or anything, because he has these guys behind that will be sitting on any group or anybody that tries to go across. So that's who I see
And
as the favorite.
I mean, calling him a second leader is almost insulting to him. If you say that Wout is the leader, that they are co-leaders, I would imagine. But the point where Remco attacks is going to be early, and covering that move would be other second leaders, and he is significantly stronger than all those second leaders. So it could be a situation like in Australia at the Worlds, where he gets away with a group of second leaders, and he just drops them like stones.
That's exactly the situation that I would think could happen. I do see Belgium as just the strongest team also, though. Like, even if that doesn't work, Stuyven was so impressive in the last week of the tour. I mean, he was under the radar. It's not like you would have really picked it. Maybe, I mean, you would have picked it up because
I don't care.
you're next level, but most people I don't think would have picked up how strong he was. And then also on like Wednesday, a little bit of insider information. Wednesday or Thursday, he was out motor pacing for like 150K here in Monaco. So he's for sure going pretty good after the tour. I was still on the couch and I heard that he was out training super hard. So I think he's also a card to play in Wout, and Tiege was. Yeah, Tiger had a pretty good tour, so I think they're for sure the strongest team. And if they, it's almost like if they don't win, it's embarrassing.
Yeah, and it's but how they
Just want to put the
manage
pressure on them.
those tactics
Yeah.
in a race of 270K with potentially four leaders. And the other thing is, I suppose we haven't mentioned the distance at 272 kilometers plus 5K on neutral. It's a very, very long race, and some people don't respond particularly well. They've got four riders there who have got history of doing well in long races. And Stuyven's interesting because not only has he done a tour, but he did the Giro, and I think he got a very, very late call to be in the tour squad, real kind of last minute, I think. So the fact that
And
he's
he
got
was also really in the last week doing things only for training for this race. Like he should never have gone in any of the breaks. Like he was in the break on stage 20, I think. No teammates there or something. He was just there to train for the Olympics. So for me, he's a guy that's, I think, and he also was kind of under the radar in both races. Like, I mean, on the gravel stage, he was really impressive, but then in general, he looked like he was only getting better from what I could tell. So he's a guy that I think, he's pretty, he's kind of a dark horse, I would say.
yeah, because he nearly upset the sprinters. Was it second week, one of those stages? If Laporte had ridden with them, they would have upset
Also that day.
the sprinters. They were they were
It's
they would
true.
they would have been gone.
Yep.
But Christoph decided to sit on for Wout. I wonder if Belgium go in with a tactic of, as long as Van der Poel doesn't win, all is good.
I think they'll go in with a tactic. As long as Jorgensen doesn't win, then we're good.
Now, I've got you as one of the form riders, so you've obviously had rest after the tour. Nobody knows, people always say this, nobody knows how their legs will respond after the Tour de France, especially when you've been working really hard right up to stage 21. Do you know how you'll respond?
No. I've also never tried to come around after a Grand Tour so fast. I've always like immediately taken a break right after any Grand Tour that I've done. So I have no idea what it's like to keep going. This weekend I did some efforts, and it was not easy, we'll say, to get the body going again. It was difficult, but I think it could be really good. Like, for sure, I'm just in insane shape. It's just a matter of if the fatigue, like, your shape is here, but your fatigue, you just don't know like how high it is, how tired you are, until you get into that hour five, six of this race, and then you'll quickly know. But I think I'm quite optimistic. I feel like I'm feeling super good.
And after your classic season, you've got nothing to fear in a race like
no,
this.
No, for sure not. I think the only downside about this, that an event like this, is that with 90 guys, you remove the positioning. I feel like I'm pretty good at positioning, and I think that advantage is taken away in a race like this. There's no, like, with 90 guys, you can be wherever you want at all times. So it'll be more about legs, but I do think I have what it takes for a medal in this race. I believe that.
Is racing against your teammates a strange thing? I don't think you've done it that often. You've only represented America, I think, once in the senior ranks. I do think, I mean, because let's be honest, Visma have got, you know, a couple of the big favourites. So you could be in that strange situation at the end in a group of maybe five, and you've got Wout, you've got Christoph, you've got Dylan.
Yeah, I think it's nice, actually. I think it's really cool because I know them so well now, and I also know how they race and also know what their mentality is and mindset, and I look forward to it. I don't know how it's going to be doing it, but I look forward to like being in those race situations against them or with them. I mean, for sure we would work together well if we're in a group together.
Well, Matteo, thank you very much. I hope it goes well on Saturday. I hope you find good legs.
Thanks, David.
And you can bring home a medal for Team America.
Team USA. Thanks so much, David. Full kumite, accumulate pace. First razor blade for the gig, we're moving weight to win the weight. Wise ways, precise aim. Trying to rhyme like this might lead your mind strain. The times change, flight delay, light haze. Thoughts looking like they foundation might cave. The look in my eyes resemble the ice age. The clocks of the route, the rent park is way park waves. Like moves saw, move raw. Involuntarily eat your full paw. Feel like a painter who can't do wrong. Fallatio from lazy do fall. To ball came, but brought a broad brain with it all game. You snow change, you do like a solid grand, probably 10. We push it in the hallway, on guard always. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Hey, Nag Daddy. Oh, yeah. I feel like. Should be fossilized in amber. Wise commander, fuck all the lies and slanders. When it come to ill niggas, you sound like a standard. Feathers and quillers, I write the standards. Cobra, cuanto tu me cobra. Tengo dinero, pero no me sobra. You want the flake of the boulder, then I'm introducing the baking soda. Into the Yoda Palace, it's a pagoda. So blowing haze in circles in Minnesota. Buffaloes in their barrio. Drama with Disco King Mario. Shotty blow in the hands of the Sicario. I reload the pill off without watching his body fall. Porky ass in the Mardi Gras. Rainbow headband, Sylvester Stallone. Skull and bone, herringbone, wishbone. Went out for the trophy and brought the shit home. Blowing loud endo. Chop the rock to 16-bit Super Nintendo. The cream rises in a crescendo, nigga. Well, now your daddy kicking at. Yo,
know what I mean? Jump off the motherfucking cliff, live out the district, shit, my nigga. Word. Woo.